Hello and welcome to what Andrew thinks is Lamb. I can't let it go. I can't let it go, my friend. Oh. He said, as we were starting about to record, he says, okay, Lamb 36, here we go. That was seven lambs ago, my friend. How are you doing, Andrew?
Four score and seven lambs ago. All right. I'm fantastic. Thomas, how are you?
I am so excited for our 43rd Lot Awful Movies.
Yeah, I totally knew that.
I don't, 43rd. You know, time machine malfunctions. Who knows which iteration of Andrew I'm even talking to right now?
I keep trying to kill Hitler, and it keeps not working. So,
yeah. We watched a delightfully pointless thriller called The Whole Truth, and this was – I got to thank Lydia for finding this one. This had all the makings of a great lamb. For one, it's available on HBO Max, which I already have because HBO is great. I love it. And it's only an hour and 33 minutes or so. So if you want to watch it, you know, feel free to go watch it. It sucks, but like, just if you want to watch it to follow along.
This is the like uncanny valley of,
oh my God, yes.
Like, not just, you know, but specifically, it's like somebody watched a lot of John Grisham movies and was like, I can make that, right? Like, it's set in Louisiana. Why? Go fuck yourself.
Oh, it is? Right? I didn't catch that. It's so pointless.
Yeah, because the judge is like, Judge Papa Doe or whatever the hell his name is. And, God. I did the first – I obviously, you know, we watched these movies twice. The first watch through, I was halfway through the movie until I realized that the victim, you know, the guy who got killed –
was Jim Belushi?
I knew it was Jim Belushi right off the bat. But his name is Boone.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. The first half, and I had to go back and edit my notes, I thought he was named Poone. And all I could think of was, what kind of a name is Poone? But anyway, that's a Fletch line. But anyway.
That was a lot of buildup for a Fletch reference. I know you work hard for your Fletch references.
I do. I work hard for Fletch references.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on the Uncanny Valley thing. For me, somehow I find this more depressing than an outright shitty movie. Like, something about a shitty movie, you're like, wow, they just, they blew it. With something like this, you're like, people worked on this? It's like, it's like they worked on a movie. Imagine how much work and money goes into this thing. And then it's like it didn't happen. This movie could not exist. I think I said it about that Scottish match guy last time. Yeah. That one, it's like that. But I would say this one's even more pointless than that one.
Here's my frustration, right? Because the first – so three-quarters of the movie takes place in a courtroom. It's perfect for Lot Awful Movies. It starts off – I think, like, the writers just got bored with this project, right? Because it – you know –
No, I'm with you that it's just we made a bot watch 1,000 hours of courtroom stuff. They're just not good writers. It's just hacky.
They do this neat technique that I really, really like. Ooh. Where they intersplice – right. In the beginning, the witness. Well, I guess they do it with every witness, but like the witness's testimony. And then you see the flashback of what actually happened. And like there's this kind of cool setup in the first 20 minutes or so where all the witnesses are lying about stuff. Right. Which 100% is a real experience you have as a lawyer. And I wait in vain for this to pay off, and it never does. I mean, it never comes close to paying off in any way whatsoever. It would be such an interesting thing to do at the hands of a competent writer to, like, make you figure out, like, okay, what didn't we show you in
done,
the flashbacks?
But yeah, it still would at least be good.
Not in a courtroom drama, I don't think.
Oh,
like,
are you
the
kidding
closest
me? I'm sure that's been done a ton. Like, every episode of Law & Order is that.
It felt a lot like, we talked about the Victor Garber show, and I've forgotten the title, that ran for one season. That explicitly, I think it was called Justice, that explicitly used this technique. So yeah, like the cross cutting to a flashback is one thing, but this was like it would highlight. They would we'll get there when we get there. And
I don't know, man. I watch a lot of TV. I think this has been done quite a bit.
Maybe I do not watch a lot of TV, so I will defer to you in saying that. Hey, I found this great new technique. It's called a star wipe. Yes. But I will say, like, the other thing that's kind of amazing is, you know, the first time you watch Fight Club, right? And you get to the big reveal. And then you go back and rewatch it, and
it all makes sense.
Of all the foreshadowing of, like, him beating the crap out of himself in his boss's office, this is literally the exact opposite of that.
The opposite of that, exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, my God.
It couldn't make less sense. So, like, within the first, I don't know, 5 minutes, I was like, oh, well, okay, well, the mom did it, and he's covering for her. And then, like, partway through... Well, we'll get to it. Why don't we get to it?
We'll
let's start the breakdown. We get go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So, scene one, we come in on Keanu Reeves, who is sitting in the courtroom and doing his Matthew Broderick Ferris Bueller's Day Off style voiceover. Which is a terrible technique for anybody who is not Ferris Bueller.
So my note is, like, it's good old gruff narrator voice that he's doing. Like, oh, we had to. And I was like, is this film noir, but without the noir part?
Yes,
like, it's just, it tries to be the, like, you picture the, well, it'd been a long time since about when she walked through my door. I thought, you know, like, is that
she
kind of shit?
All legs from you. Yeah, right.
It's totally that, except not and pointless. It doesn't make he's got a motorcycle. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, you know, because they're trying to develop, like, his character, which, by the way, motorcycle, that no backstory for that. Does that ever pay off? No,
it has
does
nothing
not.
To do with anything.
Nothing to do. Yeah.
Like, it's, and it's, it, oh, God,
yeah, no, it's
movie.
It's nonsense. I will say this, like, Keanu Reeves' acting is bad here, even for Keanu Reeves, right? Like, his sort of crazily wooden delivery that sometimes
I think it's pretty much exactly what you expect from Keanu Reeves.
But I will say, I like casting him here in that, like, he is...
Well, when you have, like, a character that has no content whatsoever, what better way to portray that than by Keanu Reeves, who
I love
age-wise, dearly.
Right, he's mid-50s, right? He looks like mid-40s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he's Keanu Reeves. He looks good.
He looks better than us.
He looks way better than me, that's for sure. But finally, like, a movie where they've taken, you know, a lead actor and, like, it's plausible that this guy has been trying cases for, like, you look at Keanu Reeves in this movie and you're like, yep, he's been trying cases in dipshit Louisiana for the past 20 years. I totally buy that. As opposed to they're like, hey,
no, they're
Ben
in
Affleck
Georgia,
is
dude.
27.
They're in Georgia.
They specifically say.
No, I have a note that says the case is state of Georgia versus the kid. I wrote it down.
Then why is it Judge Papado? I don't know. Anyway, like, every fucking law
only
movie has
people
to be in the
named Judge. They can only live in Louisiana. That's your policy.
That's Bayou country. Like, he might as well do the, like, you know, Dustin Wilson, like, oh yeah, I done got some good crawfish here. You bet. Right. Anyway, so the voiceover is he's defending Mike, who he's known all his life, on Murder One charge. By the way, you'd never charge Murder One here for reasons the movie makes clear. And he killed his father, Poon Lassiter. first bit of good law. There's a, like, bit where Keanu Reeves says, I've had cases with facts this bad, but I plead that shit out. And you're like, yes, that's exactly right. Make the deal, right? Like,
yeah.
So we start off with that.
Man, now I'm so confused because the Wikipedia says it was filmed in New Orleans.
Yeah.
But then it also was going to take place in Boston. Let's see. I don't know, man. I wrote down state of Georgia versus the kid. Why would I write that down?
Maybe because they say the county of some crazy thing, and maybe it sounded like Georgia.
Georgia County?
I don't know.
Fucking
Louisiana
random
parishes,
anyway.
Actually,
somebody get
counties.
To the bottom of this for us.
Someone not us, get to the bottom.
So we'll guess apology. We'll just pretend it's in Louisiana.
Oh. So we then kind of cross cut over to we get to see Keanu Reeves puke, which I
what?
I guess. Yeah, he goes into the bathroom and pukes and then like.
No, I know. But it's like, what was the point of that? Yeah. There's no point of any of this.
And well, once you know the plot, maybe
it
that's
makes
foreshadowing.
Less sense.
Yeah, it does. That's true.
As you say, once you know the plot twist, none of the actions make any fucking
that
sense.
Is true.
I cannot.
Yeah.
That's why I'm wondering if should we just let the cat out of the bag as to what the ultimate thing is so that as we go through it, we can talk about how fucking little sense it makes.
Okay. Yeah,
should
I
we?
Agree with that.
Why don't
yeah.
we?
So okay. let's we'll do a spoiler alert because you know the three people T. Gomes is gonna watch this movie. But you know,
I also
want
to say, did we already go past the part where the judge comes in and he's like
No. This is just we're about
then
to go there.
Wait for
so.
That. So
yes.
here's
so,
the
so
ultimate
spoiler.
Crash.
Skip ahead. Use your skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to know what happens in this movie. Go ahead. Spoil it for everybody.
I want to know who the people are who would care about the spoiling of this nothing movie. So what? So again, as you already laid out, the case before us as we first see it is it seems like a kid killed his dad. Why did he do it? We don't know. Well, as it develops, you start to see like, well, it looks like the dad was really abusive towards the mom, and the mom actually killed the dad, but the kid tried to cover for it, like put his bloody handprint on the knife and all this stuff. And that's the twist one, which you see coming a mile away. You're like, well, okay, fine, the kid's protecting the mom. And under that theory, things kind of make sense here. Like choices sort of make sense, which makes me think they're like, that wasn't twisty enough. We need to add one more and we'll just, it doesn't fuck off. If you think it needs to make sense, it doesn't need to make sense. So then what? And by the way, I called this the minute they show a flashback and the fucking lawyer, Keanu Reeves is in around during during the murder, like right after the murder. And I'm thinking, and I have so many questions for you. He was also at a barbecue in question, which witnesses are like disputing, you know, and I want to know when we get there, what the fuck do you do when your lawyer was a witness to a lot of key things in a trial? But anyway, so as soon as that happened, I was like, oh, well, he did it. Because like that's the only natural twist, and I was like, oh, I've got to be wrong because that doesn't make any sense. Sure enough, the ending is Keanu Reeves actually did it. Keanu Reeves was having an affair with the wife who's
Renee Zellweger, like Renee Zellweger.
That's
right?
What
like,
Lydia said. I was like, well, that has
Lydia
to be
and I are together. Yeah,
yeah. I was like, well, that's Renee Zellweger, and she's like, that's not Renee Zellweger. I was like, is there another blonde that the movie? There's nothing else in the cast list. So I was like, I don't know Renee Zellweger, but that has to be her based on the context of this movie. And she wouldn't believe me. But anyway, that's the big twist. It looks nothing like her.
If you remember Renee Zellweger fondly from prior movies. Yeah. Well,
I don't think I saw, I guess I haven't seen a lot of Renee Zellweger movies. I don't know nothing against her. I just didn't know. Yeah. But anyway, so that's the whole twist. It turns at the very end, it's that not only did Keanu Reeves kill the dad because, and the reasoning was, and I'm just imagining we just end the lot of the movies right here.
Good night, everybody.
I tricked you into just doing a 15-minute lamp. Not only does he, so what happened was he was having an affair with Renee Zellweger, and it gives you the indication that Jim Belushi, the amazingly cast Jim Belushi, probably the least bad in this movie, like he actually kind of works.
Although having him be, you know, Poon Lassiter, like
Poon Lassiter,
personal injury
racist
king of Louisiana, like is like Jim Belushi's a little bit of a stretch for, you know, the Deep South personal injury lawyer here,
totally believe it. I thought I was perfect. It's because I absolutely believe him as like an abusive husband. Yeah. He just looks like the type.
But having it be set in like Boston or Chicago would have been much more.
Sure.
You know,
that's
kind of like
he looks really tan. He was probably like, oh, I got to, I don't know, maybe there's more sun that I'm getting than in Chicago or something. So he tanned up.
My bench line for all of these is when Transformers decided that they were going to have Mark Wahlberg be a Texas scientist named Cade Yeager. And he's like, and he comes in and he's like, what's a lot of these fucking guys around here in this like deep Boston accent that like if you've ever spent any time in New England, you're like, that guy is from fucking Somerville, right? Like, and they're like,
he's definitely
a
Texas guy.
He grew up in the tall corn of Texas.
Okay, so back to the thing at hand, which is
so it's not that bad. That's not
you get the indication that Jim Belushi knew about the affair and sort of hints in a flashback that you see at the end. like, oh, if she ever leaves me, you know, wink, wink, I'm going to murder her. And so the whole thing is like, well, I guess, you know, we better get
the movie.
You know, we better jump on the murdering. We'll murder him first.
Right.
And it'll be a great plan where we, like, I guess, fake that he was abusive.
It's so, like, I love, you know, we talked about how, you know, I went watched Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. Like, I love moral ambiguity among characters, right? Like, it's like that can be so well done when you're like, okay, like, how long were you kind of like making excuses, you know, throughout Breaking Bad, you know, for Walter White? And you're like, oh, okay, like, here's the point of no return. Like, this movie, it never takes a stand up. So, you know, again, since this is still the spoiler section, right? Like, Keanu Reeves straight up murders Jim Belushi, gets away with it. And the movie's like, we don't know how you should feel about that. And you don't either. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so dumb. So
it's crazy. So what happened was
as they were staging the whole thing of like, oh, he's abusive, and so they're going to just have the mom take the fall and do a self-defense-y thing.
Right.
Which,
right.
you know, okay.
Which you would totally, yeah.
Like, yeah, as far as murder plots go, not the worst one I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And so, but then the kid, I guess, got home early, saw that the mom had done it, and got, you know, panicked and was like, oh, I'll say I did it. Not entirely sure why, but you know, the thing that bothers me about this movie is they decide to say that the kid is a forensic genius. He's a law genius and went to forensics camp, is what they say.
It is,
which factors
so
in zero.
Nothing. This definitely feels like this script got workshopped by like 87 people, right? Like, and so literally no foreshadowing pays off until they have to like shoehorn something in 2 minutes before the reveal in like the very end of Act Three. All right, so
you
keep
know
that in
the
mind,
the right? end result.
Yeah. Now that you know that, we're gonna go all the way back to scene number two, which is the start of the trial, right? And
that is important. We find out also that I guess the kid has figured out that it was Keanu Reeves. Like, that seems to also be the end reveal. Again, this is all the end of the movie. So the kid indicates that, like, oh, he actually knows.
But he figures it out at the end, even though he had the information all along. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It is just, it's nonsense. Anyway, all right. So we go back to the start of the trial, and here's what we learn as we sort of go back and forth. We get a decent opening statement from the prosecutor, right? And we learn that Keanu's client, Mike, is not talking to him. And Keanu leans over, and he doesn't mean this literally. I had to watch this twice to realize he doesn't mean this literally. But he says to Mike, I'm going to have to defer my opening statement unless you talk to me.
Yeah.
And Mike still sits there stoically, not because that's a rule or anything, right? It isn't. But just from a strategy standpoint, like, you can't say in an opening statement, right? You don't give arguments. That's why we called the show Opening Arguments, because you can't, right? But you describe the evidence you're going to put on. If you haven't talked to your client and you have no idea what evidence you're going to put on, probably not a bad idea to defer.
So, yeah, I want to ask you about this opening statement deferral. Is that a thing? Can you wait until like late? We're not ready. We'll do the opening statement later.
So here's the thing. I had to look this up because I have never, ever seen a lawyer do this. And I thought it was something that they just made up for the movie. Nope. Turns out it is a real thing. And it's a thing that lawyers used to do, like, 50 years ago, right? Like, I found a law review article that cited actual scientific research that was done in the 1980s, because apparently it was a common enough practice up until like the late 70s, early 80s, that they did social science research that conclusively proved like what is stunningly obvious to anybody, which is the witnesses are far more engaged and more likely to accept your defense theory of the case if you give an opening statement.
Do you mean the jury?
I mean the jury in evaluating the witnesses. Sorry. Right. So you don't have to edit.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, because on one hand, so this struck me as so specific that it better be true, because I was like, I've never heard of that, but this is like, That's a bold thing to just make up. So I actually figured it would be true. But I thought it was, on one hand, I was like, well, it is kind of interesting to think, because I wrote it down. Defense reserves its right to an opening statement until after the prosecution presents its case.
And the reason you'd
think, well, maybe that's a good way to be like, once they've tried to build their case, you could tailor your opening statement to it. And, you know, that might be an advantage. But if you're saying that the research shows it's the other way, I could also see the downside being, well, the prosecution has essentially got to dominate, you know, like the whole beginning, and maybe the jury like is more inclined to their facts or the way they see it if all they're getting is that narrative for a good chunk of time. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. And also, it doesn't give you an anchor point for your cross-examination questions, right? Like when the prosecution says, we're going to prove, and again, I said as sort of a throwaway that this is a fine opening statement here. Like, well, like writer number seven, because this was only, you know, 3 minutes into the movie, writer number seven was pretty good at this. Writer number 35, who does the closing statements, closing arguments, is fucking terrible. But yeah, and you do the thing, we've talked about this before, where you sort of front load the problems with your case, right? And you're like, hey, the defendant, good kid, no prior record, co-captain of the debate team. The victim, shitty dad. You're going to hear about how he's a shitty dad.
And the prosecution is saying this, yeah.
Yeah, right, in his opening statement. Mm-hmm. And so that, right, when you don't respond to that as the defense attorney with an opening statement of your own, like – the jurors have no idea what they're listening for during your cross-examination, right? Like, you're not
– yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, great point. Sorry. I was just going to ask you a question about this shitty movie, which is, in light of the spoilers we all know, how the fuck did we get here? Do you remember – like, how much – did the movie talk about, you know, why would the kid not, like, not want Keanu as an attorney? Maybe the kid would just be like, no, I'll take a dumb shit, you know, like any other attorney but the murder of my dad.
It especially because the thing that he lets us know, right, that becomes the big reveal for us as the viewing public late in Act 3 is a thing the kid knew all along, right? Like there's no reason for him to be learning it in the middle of the trial. So it's crazy. There is a throwaway line where they say that the kid hasn't spoken to anybody since the murder of the father.
Yeah.
It makes it from a screenwriting perspective makes 100%
a human motivation perspective. It makes no sense. If the kid, there's a couple possibilities, either because like you say, the kid knows all along. Now, obviously I don't think he knew like when he took the blame, you know, in the moment he thought his mom killed his dad or whatever. But like shortly after, I think he saw he saw Keanu's watch under the bed or whatever. And that's how he figured out later. So,
which by the way, makes no sense. Like,
makes no sense. I often, when I'm having sex,
I take my watch off and not only do I not throw it across the room, which, you know, you might, but I carefully slide it under the bottom corner of the of the comforter. It is eight levels of nonsense. I went back, like I said, we watched this twice, so there is zero foreshadowing in any of the prior clips, right? Like a good movie, like get a glimpse of the watch, whatever.
Their whole goal was to be as surprising as possible, but that has the downside of making no fucking sense.
Right. Well,
like, you can do the end of your movie, do this whole movie, and then the last scene, Keanu unzips his skin and he's an alien the whole time.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I'd be like, didn't see that coming. What a twist. Yeah. Stupid. I was in the middle of asking you something. So you need to, how did we get here is what I was asking. And I think, you know, we both agree that like pick a motivation of the son. So if the son is like upset that he's been duped into taking the blame for killing his dad, then the son would like, I don't know, maybe the son blackmails Keanu. Maybe the son, maybe there's some dynamic there. Or maybe his dad really wasn't abused, a piece of shit, and he's like, whatever. Either way, why is he doing this? The thing he's doing is having Keanu be his lawyer but not talking to him. And then from Keanu's perspective, why does he give a shit if the kid talks to him? They try to do this thing like, you got to talk to me so I know what's in your head. Well, no, dude, You know, you already know enough to do a defense.
Well,
what do you...
I mean, presumably, since he's nailing the kid's mom, like, yeah. It would not, like, that would make it rough the next time out to be like, oh, yeah, sorry, I got your son sent away to prison for life. Or, you know, hell, it's Louisiana or Georgia, like, probably executed, right? Like, the way in which this is supposed to work is, this has to be, like, the only way this can work from a screenwriting perspective is, it's a fact that Mike knew all along that he saw the watch.
Which it is, 100%.
But then he learns something in the middle of the trial where he's like, oh, that's Keanu's watch. They forgot that second part.
Well, yeah, or he learns maybe the kid, I don't know, maybe you do, you got to make some decision. Either Jim Belushi is actually a stand-up guy and it's like a tragic story of the, you know, the kid kind of thought he was doing something right by taking the blame, but then it turns out, well, maybe he wasn't abusive, which I think they kind of do, but they also have testimony of like, yeah, Jim Belushi was raping his wife. They do it both ways. Like that she was faking some of the abuse, but not all of it. I don't get it. I don't know what they're going for here.
And that's an excellent transition to scene three, which is the first witness to testify. This is Angela Morley, the flight attendant on the chartered private jet that T. Boone Pickens here rents all the time, right? And she is, right? She's the flight attendant that he always asks for. And again, with the, you know, the technique that they use of asking for her testimony, and then we see what really happened.
Yeah.
By
the way, this is, you say flight attendant of a private jet service that he, like, what does he do again?
They say he's a personal injury lawyer.
So, like, he charters jets across the country back and forth enough to have like a preferred charter service.
Movies think that lawyers make way more money than we actually make.
Have him be a mega church preacher, and then he can have that kind of fucking money.
Exactly. Yeah, this is Creflo Dollar money here. So he charters private jets back and forth. Yeah, we learned from the NRA stuff, like, those flights are like $90,000
a pop. Yeah, they're $1 billion.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
And we see, right, all of these are setting up that Boone, Jim Belushi, is, you know, he's a serial womanizer, right? Like, we see, you know, models getting on the plane and everything else.
Models.
well, you know.
The closest this movie could get to casting models, I guess.
Yeah.
I was, I'm not to be a jerk about it, but I got the impression that it was like, no, just straight up hookers, you know, like.
I could be hookers. Yeah. I defer to your model versus hooker expertise on this question.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to have my expertise recognized for once on the show.
So, and like, there's so much here that could have been interesting in a good movie, right? Like, because what we see is, right, the audience knows what really happens. So Keanu Reeves says to Angela Morley, you ever, you know, fabricate any passenger manifests and leave off that, you know, T. Boone Pickens here is bringing in hookers or models or whatever. And
hookers and flapjacks.
And flapjacks, yeah. And then we cut away and we see that he did in fact do that. And then we cut back to her saying, no, that would be a federal crime. So right. I certainly would never do that. And what comes next is, right, Keanu Reeves has the manifest, right? Like, it is like, that's what you do in a competent movie, right? In order to discredit her testimony, that doesn't happen. Instead, we get, I absolutely love this. We get the prosecution objecting to this line of questioning, and then there's a sidebar because this movie has more sidebars than any movie ever. I don't have an analogy for that. It just has a shit ton of sidebars.
It has more sidebars than a Randall Eliason blog post.
There you go. And we get the first, but by no means the last, of the judge saying crazy shit of that's at the level of like, well, Matlock was on in the bar last night. You know, the sound wasn't on, but I think I got the gist of it. He says, you're fishing, counselor, but I'll allow it. What? Oh, it's just.
Well, okay. I meant to bring up earlier, to the start of this whole thing, the judge is like, Now, you both know I love a Swift Trial, right?
I love a Swift Trial.
Yeah.
On a murder one. So yeah. I'd like to be out of here by lunch, you know. Yeah,
Letting everybody know I care nothing about my job. I don't particularly care who's right or wrong or did whatever. Just as long as we finish this up, I've got golf later.
Yeah.
OJ judge had been like, yeah, let's, I've maybe 36 hours of courtroom time, then we're out of here. Done.
I have told that story about being in Cleveland with 100 lawyers and the judge's clerk saying, does the defense intend to produce an expert? And I sort of looked around and I was like, We intend to produce lots of experts, yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, we have not yet gotten into – this is now writer number 8. But writer number 8 is okay on direct examination, right? Like there are some leading questions, but okay, like whatever. I can't be too big a stickler on that. You can ask for opinion, for lay opinion testimony, right? Because the flight attendant Angela says, well, you know, Mike struck me as a, you know, typical sullen teenager type.
Right.
And you might be thinking like, well, that, you know, that's not a fact. That's an opinion. But that's a permissible. Like we all know what the hell a sullen teenager is. You can give that. Okay. So we're done with her. Now we get the limo driver. I will point out limo driver, unlike Angela, does not get a name. Maybe because he's the only African American.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Already nothing makes sense because we have a couple of witnesses who are lying for the dead guy that's no longer going to give them business?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you?
No. And also, the limo driver makes no sense as a prosecution witness, right? The airplane, the flight attendant, right? She could potentially have, right? Because this is about the murder of Jim Belushi by his son, right? That's the son is who's on trial. The limo driver testifies, oh yeah, I used to drive around Jim Belushi with the same set of hookers and or models and or flapjacks. That has nothing to do whatsoever with the crime, right? Like it's not even tangentially related. It is just letting us as the audience know that Jim Belushi is a bad guy.
Okay, so we had a bit of an intermission to this one. Feel like we'll let everyone in on a peek behind the curtain. No sense in pretending. We got interrupted by some really bad news that last time that RBG had passed away. So we're coming back to this one. And so let's have a delightful time breaking down the second half of a really shitty Keanu Reeves movie. Where did we last leave off, Andrew?
Yeah, we left off. We had concluded the We had concluded the testimony of the prosecution witness of the limo driver, who was put on the stand to tell us, the movie viewers, that Jim Belushi likes the ladies, but makes no sense in the context of actually putting up a witness for the prosecution.
So that would have been like a defense witness almost.
Yeah, yeah. Or nothing, right?
Like, yeah. Or nothing. Like,
when your murder victim, you know, is a womanizer, I'm thinking that maybe that just, you don't get any testimony on that, but who knows?
Yeah, or I like the idea that, like, no, every single person, Jim Belushi, Poon Jenner, or Poon, what is the guy's name? So, whatever. Ever
Poon
met.
Lassiter.
Poon Lassiter, yeah. Who am I thinking of? Who's Boone? Isn't there a Boone? I don't know why I'm looking. Oh, yeah,
there's
Boone Jenner.
Yeah, Canadian. T. Boone Pickens.
Boone Jenner is a hockey player. That's why I knew there was a Boone Jenner. I was like, who am I thinking of? Yeah. So T. Boone Pickens. Yeah. Like you don't just get to interview everybody they ever met in their lives just for the whole, let alone when the judge is like, I want to be out of here by noon on this whole murder one trial, as we discussed already. Okay.
Yeah,
I think we get to finally meet the hot girl.
Yeah, we get a hot girl associate intersecting with Keanu Reeves talking with his jury consultant. And since the associate stuff is all terrible and nonsense, I gotta say, this is a proper jury consultant in a criminal trial movie, right? Like, the jury consultant was there to sort of give some tips during voir dire, and there's a, like, mention of, oh, the associate didn't show up in time for voir dire, which, you know, like, that's not a good thing on your resume. But then he's giving exactly what jury consultants do, which is they watch what the jury does during your trial in order to help you refine your performance, right? So they might say, like, oh, yeah, well, the entire jury was asleep when you got into your 17th question of their account. Right. Not saying that that's happened to me before, but that's totally happened to me before. Right. And like, that's how you use them. They're not like Gene Hackman. Like, yeah. OK, here are the three jurors I'm going to kill. Yeah.
They're not in a bunker with like 17 monitors on everybody's. They've got like the vital signs of the jury. Like, is that guy juror number 8's pulse decreased slightly? Oh, juror number 7 has a full erection, by the way. So let's figure out how we did that. And make sure we keep that in our back pocket. This strikes me as a field that could be rife for abuse. Am I wrong? This feels like a field. Like, I'm tempted to try to go in the jury consulting business because I feel like it's going to be a lot of unfalsifiable claims. You know, I could go in there and be like, well, I saw the way their pupils dilated when you whatever. You know, and it would be hard to, like, blame the jury consultant for if you lose, you know? So I feel like you could get away with just being completely full of shit. What do you think?
I think that's a really, really good observation, right? Like, think about how these cases come about. These cases come in which you use jury consultants come about either because there is an egregious amount of money at stake, right? What we call bet the company litigation, right? Or because you have a very, very wealthy defendant in a criminal case who, you know, doesn't want to be convicted, right? And so those are the kinds of cases in which you're like, you know, think about like the OJ trial, right? In which you're like, well, how much money would you like to spend to not go to prison? And OJ was like, all the money.
Yeah.
I'd like to spend all the money to not go to prison. And
he's got
and
NFL
he
money. He's got Naked Gun money.
Naked Gun money. Oh, my gosh. I loved Nordberg. Naked Gun. Ugh. Yeah. I have not watched the Naked Gun since.
Me neither.
Yeah. And they were so good.
They were good. I thought it was hilarious.
He was. So, yeah, right. And in those situations where people are saying, like, yeah, there's $500 million at stake, or yeah, there's my personal freedom at stake, and I am a multimillionaire, that's precisely the situation in which you see, like, pseudoscience, fraud, and abuse, right? Like, you're dying of cancer. What could it hurt to take this colloidal silver, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah, it strikes me as the police hiring the psychic to, like, help out with the kidnapping or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that really happens, but it's in every show. Like, every TV show will have one episode where the police hire the psychic and then the real detective is like, come on, you know? And they got it.
Yeah.
Like
that's
almost every police show.
I talked to Marsh about this, and, like, at least it's happened in London, so I have to imagine that it has happened in the United States.
Over at Scotland Yard, huh?
Yeah. we were just chatting about, like, hiring. But that mindset, right? Like, this – my grandmother went through this, and, you know, where near the end – my grandmother on my dad's side smoked, like, 3 packs a day, lived until she was 92, wow. Right? I mean, she was but at the end of her life, like, you know, she lost her foot because of, you know, complications from the smoking in her bloodstream. And, you know, and she was like, she had cancer and she was wearing like copper socks and stuff. And it was like, you know, was I going to pick a fight with my grandmother about, like, well, you know, that's all a bunch of bullshit, Grandma. Like, no, like, you know, whatever. Like,
speaking of, know now that time has passed and we're both in the future and our teams are both in the World Series.
Woo!
Cannot believe the Dodgers won. But anyway, what I was going to say is
both of those game sevens were nail biters.
Oh, my God. Do you remember the — it might have been 2 years ago — there was a season where every fucking dumbass baseball player was wearing these power bracelets, you know, or something, like these necklaces and stuff that were like, you know, some wooey bullshit. Do you remember that? When was that? 4 years ago?
It it happens perpetually. And,
yeah,
and so
there'll be like, some new dumb thing they all do.
So here's – I actually have some insight into this because, again, sports clients, right? So I had a client who was asked to evaluate – this was a former Major League Baseball player who was then had a public blog, right? Was a public personality. And this – I will not name the water company, but they sent him like a couple of cases of – water that was supposed to have nanobubbles in it to like give you extra performance water. God. Right? Like it was.
I'm telling you, Andrew, if we didn't have a conscience, money that could be made.
We used to keep, because the bottles like were super cool looking.
Yeah,
bottles.
That's all it is. You just you design an amazing bottle and then you think. The dumb human primate mind is like, well, this is clearly magical.
Yeah. And my son, you know, it was like almost 10 years ago. My son was like 7 or 8, right? And so he would take the like nano bubble water with him to baseball. And like all the other kids are like, ooh, what's that like sports drink you got? And Alex is like, it's water with nano bubbles in it. And like, and Alex was totally in on the joke, right? But like,
meanwhile, they're seeing Alex crush homers out of the park. They're like, I need some of that nano water.
Well, and that's how it happens, right? Like that's how those things proliferate.
The minute they think there's some competitive advantage, they all think they're losing out. But they stopped. I think it might have been power balance. I'm going to Google it because maybe this was longer ago than I remember. Because I'm pretty sure they named temporarily the Sacramento Kings. I think it was the old stadium or whatever arena before we built the nice new one in Sacramento. I think it was Power Balance Pavilion. And I think these dumbass Power Balance, it used to be Sleep Train Arena and now it was Power Balance Pavilion. That's how powerful, that's how like big this dumbass pseudoscience crap got to the point where it was, they got their name on our stadium and I was so mad. I think maybe Sam and I talked about it over on Shoosh or something because everybody was wearing these dumb things that were supposed to be magical.
Yep. And all of it is based on the idea that you would do anything to get a 1% advantage and you're being paid millions of dollars and given this for free in those cases. So like, what the hell? And then just confirmation bias. So anyway, we meet the jury consultant and the associate who comes in to offset the fact that the jury consultant actually has proper jury consultant lines and we will never see him again. He was just there to introduce the associate. Keanu Reeves says, oh, well, you worked for so-and-so. And then she's like, yeah, and also I won all my mock trials. And and look, like that would be like me advertising the show. Like I graduated with honors from Harvard.
You win all your arguments with me.
Yeah, but also I won $67 playing party poker online. Like mock trials are fun. Right? Like it's good, it's exciting, but they bear zero resemblance to you getting a job and it just
And, there's an Arrested Development. I can't remember if it's in the new ones or the old ones, but there's like a show Mock Trial with Judge Reinhold. Mock Trial with Judge Reinhold. There's like this song.
I love Judge Reinhold.
So what I have to bring up. Yeah, and there's a lot of jokes about like how they couldn't call him judge. There's all this stuff. He's not actually a judge. Anyway, remember what we talked about a month ago for us and 5 seconds ago for you guys. Andrew, the idea of the final twist that we already revealed is something that they just must have come up with at the end and then tried to retcon it and it doesn't work. Because why is the guy, if you're Keanu Murderer Reeves who murdered the guy, you are the murderer. Why are you bringing in another, like more hired guns that don't need to be involved at all?
It's you would set up the exact opposite of this, right?
Like
you would not have the kind of resources that help you win. But what you would have is like a team of like high powered associate, right? Like you would, because you would want to say like, well, I threw all my resources into winning this case. And you, and so you would make it look like you did that. You wouldn't bring in the like wild card associate who's secretly brilliant and can
and
do that.
Study
like
late nights in the hotel room with all the materials.
And she has that like Matt Damon in Rounders kind of bullshit of like, you know, good lawyers can instantly read people. Yeah.
Yeah. And not only that, Andrew, the mom is in on it too. So it's not as though you're trying to throw the case in a way that like your wealthy, you know, benefactor needs to not know about. So you have to like look like you're working and you're not, you know, the mom's in on it. The mom knows. She's guilty too. And she's the one with the money. So like just kind of do whatever this whole routine where, well, if you don't talk to me, I can't put on a defense, which already didn't make sense. The whole thing is so fucking stupid. It's all in the service of a twist that isn't even that good.
Can we just point out at the end of this, Keanu Reeves is going to send a bill for legal services to the mom. Like, I just want to, I want to be thinking about like how you fill that bill out.
Yeah.
If this were god awful movies, we would insert a doodly doo here, but we're not going to.
Yeah, yeah, because Keanu is, you know, obviously porking the money. That's a phrase people don't use anymore. But I feel like porking was a good. Was that just because it could be on TV? Like,
yeah. And
you could
I
say that without.
I think related to. Have you seen any of the Porky's movies? I have to feel like it's Well, that's
anyway. Imagine Keanu porking the mom and they murdered the dad together, I guess, to be together. But like him being like, so technically
by the
you
way,
still have to, you have to just, you know, like we'll get into trouble if you don't pay this legal bill, you know, outline items of like every time.
I got an associate to pay here. So, you know,
$400,000.
Well, you know, I can't help it. She spent a lot of time in the library. So, all right. So we meet the associate. It's again, I don't really understand why she's being like leased to him. Like, he gets like an option to buy later. It's very, very
weird. I have a series of notes. So we discussed this before the show. I'm not a good note taker. I imagine Andrew probably is, given what he's done for a living, got through. My notes are for this are usually prompts for me to remember what I meant to say, which is a little problematic in a situation that doesn't usually come up where a prized, beloved justice dies and you delay your thing by a month. Here's a series of notes, and we'll just see if anything comes of these, Andrew, see if this makes sense. I have, okay, first off, the hot new girl, Miss Vardir, never Miss Vardir. Okay, that's self-explanatory. Also, how about you just, like, make some sort of case? I'm guessing that was about him not knowing what to do with the guy not talking and all that. Like, maybe just make a case, like do a lawyer, do a law, do one lawyer, please. Let's see. Oh, I have this too. You have to introduce your hot new employee to the court. Yeah, I think is that real? I'm pretty sure she came in and Keanu wanted to just be like, look at this. Check out my hot associate, everybody. May it please the court. I'd like to introduce, hey, get up and walk around, do a spin. Let's have everybody get a good look at you.
I mean, well,
it kind of happened.
It does happen in this movie. It's one of these, like we've talked about this before, like sort of generally cinematographically, like I think lawyer movies tend more than most to have scenes that like the second you think about them, you're like, oh, that scene was there for the audience and not internally for the movie. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and that scene is there to, again, to reinforce, like, the sort of fish out of water, like, oh, his associate is joining, like, on witness number 4 for the prosecution, which is Officer Steed.
Yeah. Here's one that I can remember. The police officer testified in business casual, which I thought, like, wouldn't every prosecutor want to have your officer testify in, like, they're in the middle of arresting somebody?
Yeah,
like, wouldn't you want to get the benefit of that uniform?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, that's not funny.
Officer testified like he just got off the golf course and was like, not, it was the most ineffective way to have an officer testify.
This testimony would have made sense if this was like a cameo by, like, you know, Bill Pullman or whatever. Like, I will give you 12 minutes for this movie. I will be in business casual. I will read my lines one take and then I'm out of here.
In real life, you want an officer to testify with his gun pointed at the defendant.
Yeah.
I just got to keep a guy. Just, he's dangerous. I can't let him out of my sights.
One of the questions that is typically asked that will disqualify a juror is the question, would you give undue weight to the testimony of a police officer, right? And they ask it like that, right? And you get dismissed for cause. Now, hopefully we're moving towards a society in which maybe there are some negative answers to that as well. Like,
yeah, I imagine the due weight that they're assuming is probably way more than we should give.
Yeah, but defense counsel in criminal cases have been asking since time immemorial, like, are you inclined to believe a witness more just because he is a police officer? And some people will say yes, and then they get dismissed from the juror pool. I've never heard somebody say, well, actually, I would give that less weight because – yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, is probably the right answer. And again, not just the right answer institutionally, but like – you know, look, we've talked about this. There is, you know, some of the only good research Alan Dershowitz ever did was the test-a-lying stuff we talked about on the main show. That somehow
and now he's a professional test-a-liar.
Yeah, somehow he forgot about the second that.
Other thing I was going to bring up, Andrew, is I think there's an opening for a legal position for you.
Oh.
Did you? Trending right now on Twitter as we speak is Zoom Dick. And it's what you might think it is. Jeffrey Toobin suspended for exposing his penis during a professional Zoom call. So sounds like an opening for a new legal expert, Andrew.
I will tell you, right before we got on to record this, I had two separate people send me that story, to which I replied, please tell me this is not a story about Jeffrey Toobin's dick.
And it is. Narrator,
it was. Of course
it is. there's no pictures or anything, I don't think, so.
Oh, but also, well, that's too bad because I have that to check off my bucket list.
No, I'm glad. I'm just saying. I'm really
glad.
But apparently,
you don't have to see Jeffrey Toobin's junk on your list of things to do before you die.
So anyway, after we get done recording, we got to work up a resume, you know, see whatever. Get this position. Okay.
Yeah. I think he certainly could do worse than the law offices of P. Andrew Torres to handle his Zoom dick case. We are experts in dick law, so that's actually a true thing. Anyway,
so at one point, I think they asked this officer, "What did you do first?" Wait, is this a woman or a man? I can't remember. Is there another first responder that gets interviewed?
There is, but that was previously. So.
Oh, well, anyway, I have a note that's like, what did you do first? And she answers, I made sure the victim was dead. And I just imagine they're like strangling, cut to the strangling the victim, just making sure you're dead, just standard police procedure. Sorry. If I arrive and you're almost dead, I have to finish the job. It's just part of the making sure the victim was dead. Not like checking if the victim's okay, you know, or anything.
Making sure is a weird
thing. I wrote a quote. There. I wrote the line. I made sure the victim was dead. Cut to
That's outstanding. Well, that leads to my only other note here is that there's this weird background noise going on, such that I had to take my headphones off because I thought it was my washing machine knocking in the background, but that doesn't have any relation to any other thing. In the movie. Then we get the Law and Order style walk and talk outside the courtroom, and we learn that room 254 at the Motel 6 is the war room.
The war room.
This is another thing of I do that too. Like, I've talked about having an 8-week trial in Beaumont, Texas, and we were at like the Super 8 or the Motel 6 or, you know, some shithole exactly like in this movie. And I rented an extra room, and it was the war room and had all the stuff in it. So
I want to have a war room. Can I come next time? I want to visit your war room and
absolutely
do some war things.
Yeah.
Plan, game plan. I'll do the jury consultant. You got to get me. Here's how we would do our unethical shtick. You would get me started with some good experience that I could put on my resume, and then I'd branch out from there, and I'd just be like, look at that person's eyes. They're clearly shifty. They have a path. I would just make shit up, you know? It's going to work. Anyway, we shouldn't have recorded this. Forget that, everybody.
My Confession by Thomas Smith.
Yodel Mountain Jury Consultants.
There we go.
I also have written down, I don't know if it already happened.
We are correct 50%, almost 60% of the time.
Hey, not bad. Better than your average psychic or whatever. I also have a note I want to ask you. I don't know if it already happened or not, but I have objection inconsistent with previous statement. Do you have that written down? Is that a...
Yes.
Is that a thing you can do?
No. I made that exact same note, so I'm glad you queued that up. What you do is just impeach their testimony, right?
Yeah.
Like, you let them testify, and then you say, okay, the prosecutor just asked you X, and you said Y, right? Yeah. Now, I want you to look at this screen, on which I have placed your statement from the deposition in 937-point font. Can you read that to me, right? And then you read it out, and then you ask the question that we've talked about on this show. And
so were you lying then, or are you lying now?
Exactly right. And then you watch them squirm. It's great. So, objecting to inconsistent with prior statement would be the dumbest thing you could possibly. And I don't know why you wouldn't do. Like, the thing – this is one of the few instances where lawyers get to do a thing that's actually, like
– yeah.
Kind Showboating. Of dramatic, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. And
Mrs. They were like, Simpson, I'm confused.
I'm confused. I thought you said.
Yep.
All right. So then after the war room, that's when we first learn that Keanu worked for T. Boone Pickens. And then we're back to the trial. This whole movie is basically the trial. So, like, this is a great choice for Law and Awful Movies. It was a terrible choice if you like watching movies.
But, I have a depressing joke, but in all of this, this is where we find out that because they're showing flashbacks, you know, like they show the flashback of the murder and all that. And in one of the flashbacks, Keanu is just there. I already mentioned this, but Keanu's just at the crime scene, like right after it happened, which is how that tipped us off that, okay, well, something's going on here. But anyway, it showed some killer white privilege, like literally killer white privilege in that. A man is there who probably shouldn't be there. Like, your question as an officer would be like, hey, who the fuck are you? Why are you here? Where'd you get here? And the officer is like, hey, buddy, we're going to need you to step away from the man you murdered. can you back up here? They were trying to, you know, like, he's at the scene. It's like fucking Rittenhouse all over again. If you're white and you just killed somebody, the police are like, can you move so we can find somebody else to blame? Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, that was less hilarious than I was expecting, but also true.
I told you it was a depressing joke. It's just it's funny because it's true, except it's also not really funny.
It's not mainly that just funny.
It's mainly just true.
Oh yeah, there is that. But no, we get more testimony that only makes sense if you think of yourself as watching a movie in which this testimony is taking place. This is the prosecutor has now put on Arthur, the neighbor, who clearly has the hots for Mrs. Poon. I have long since forgotten her name.
Zellweger.
Maisel Poon.
Renee Zellweger is what
it is. Right. I know I knew it was Renee Zellweger.
No, I'm just saying, just refer to it if you don't remember the name. Fuck it. It's Renee Zellweger.
I am not wasting my opportunity to call Renee Zellweger Mrs. Poon, okay?
Yeah.
So Arthur is like kind of peeping Tom creepy. Like you're sitting there thinking like, okay, the flashback is supposed to be describing his testimony. Like, how would that work? Like, well, I often found myself looking over at their house late at night. Like, this would just make no sense whatsoever. But we see, again, in a flashback, that Arthur could not possibly be testifying to, because we see young Mike and Poon watching the OJ trial when Mike was a kid. Like, Mike was going to grow up to be a lawyer. Like, how would Arthur testify to that? Like, that makes no sense. something happened, and then we get like a montage of scenes of Poon, like, basically, you know, abusing his wife, right?
Or is he? We still don't know. I don't know if that really happened. The movie doesn't know whether this was all a setup or not. And neither do we. And we can't tell you.
And neither do we. That's why we could call this episode "And Neither Do We." So then that kind of worthless testimony is over. And then we get – you are a fellow sports aficionado.
Hmm.
Does it piss you off as much as it pisses me off? Because what we have here is we have Keanu telling hot associate the Rumble in
about
the Jungle
story. Rope-a-dope? Yeah. Are we doing rope-a-dope?
Yeah, we're doing rope-a-dope. Good. I'm glad you're with me on this.
I have the rope-a-dope.
He's telling the rope-a-dope story like as if there is anyone on earth who has not heard the rope-a-dope. And she's like, really? You say there was a black man who engaged in fisticuffs?
It was very mansplainy.
It was super mansplainy. And also, like, everybody forgets the fucking rope in the rope-a-dope story, right? Like, rope-a-dope is not let them pummel the shit out of you is the key to winning, right? Rope-a-dope was... like that Ali like leaned back against the rope, which absorbed the shock of the blows.
He's explaining rope-a-dope, and I was just like, that you can't do that, but in lawyer form. That doesn't make like sure, if you guys are gonna do a boxing match to see who wins the trial, maybe that would make sense. But like, it doesn't make sense, and like they don't even.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't even think about the fact that, like, it doesn't translate to the law. But, like, it doesn't translate. Like, because this is abused in Rocky, right? Where they're like, yeah, so the key is, like, get hit in the face 800 times.
Yeah.
And that, like, no. Like, that's not the way the rope-a-dope worked. But yes, in the law, it's just, like, well, what we're going to do is we're going to file 12 losing pleadings in a row. Like,
we're going to let them establish a rock-solid case that we cannot beat at all. And then, I don't know, I guess we win if they get tired. If they're too tired from just establishing such a good case, like they're just exhausted, they don't show up, then we win. That's my plan. Rope-a-dope.
It was so bad. So after learning his strategy is the rope, and by the way, like it makes extra triple no sense because Keanu Reeves wants to lose, or I don't exactly know. Like,
is it a double bluff? Like, this is how he's gonna not win on purpose, but we still don't know. Is he trying to win or not? That's what we don't know, because, you know, he's still porking the mom, as I said earlier. So I imagine that he needs to, you know, not let the son rot in prison.
You would think.
For his crime.
The mom seems strangely unconcerned about any of this.
Yeah, not very concerned. Either way, however it goes.
As long as you're not in jail, Keanu, we're
just
all
good. Just let me know, like, when it's done, the result. Yeah. I don't really care one way or the other. I just want to know, am I visiting him in jail, or am I visiting, is he going to live at home? Whatever. Just let me know.
Then we get more terrible leading questions of the detective. Keanu Reeves gets up and asks a bunch of like open-ended questions on cross, which is like, this illustrates why you don't ask open-ended questions on cross, because, you know, comes back and is like, well, yeah, I don't even have the exact note of like what he saw Mike do, but again, yeah, it was just one of those like, so how could you possibly know that Mike did this? I was like, well, you know, we found Mike's fingerprints on the bloody knife, and
it good question? Listener Thomas S. asks, is it good lawyering when you're a defense attorney to ask the officer, so I'm going to let you riff for 5 minutes, top reasons why my guy did it. Just off the top of your head, no particular order, go. Is that a good questioning strategy?
It's not great.
Okay.
It's
so
funny.
So don't do that.
Like,
gotcha.
It's one of the things that, like, I teach to my freshman debaters who are doing high school debate is the number of time, because after you give your constructive speech, the other side gets 3 minutes of cross-examination. And younger debaters tend to be terrible about this, right? And because asking good cross-ex questions is hard. But I'll say, like, just stop and listen, because the number of times that you'll say, like, okay, the standard for the round is protecting individual rights, so whichever side best protects rights should win. And they'll get up, and, like, their first cross-ex question will be like, so your standard is protecting individual rights. But wouldn't you say that, like, protecting society is more important than individual? And you're just sitting there and you're like, okay, you know that they've told you that they're going to make, like, an argument about protecting society in their speech, which they haven't given yet, right? And so I always, like, coach my kids to say, like, well, no, actually, like, the problem with that is 1, 2, 3, right? Like, I just coached to come up with, like, a bunch of different answers because they've previewed their argument for you. And then they get up and get to give the argument. And then you get to get up in your speech and be like, well, they asked me about this in Cross X. And then they made the argument anyway. That's kind of weird. So anyway, so real life, the way
you know, I'm looking at how much longer we have to go. I'm gonna have to limit you on personal stories. I think I'm calling it, everybody. No more personal stories out of Andrew.
All right. So we do. So I'm going to skip over a couple of scenes because what they principally establish is another red herring. that is that we see the prosecutor sort of coaching the witness, right? And all of these witnesses, I think we said this in the first record, but it's worth bearing again. All of these witnesses are lying for the prosecution, right? They're not lying in huge ways, but we see them say, like, you know, for example, with the coroner, it says, well, did you wash out her hair or not? And he says, no, I definitely didn't. And then we see in the flashback of him, you know, washing out her hair. And the prosecutor's like, that's exactly the kind of detail that could confuse the jury. Well, maybe I've forgotten. I just have washing her hair in my notes.
Her hair. I fucking forgot. Yeah, that's all right. Well, and it's weird because it doesn't really make sense why any of them are lying. We covered that last time. Right. Like, we've got a bunch of, like, casual employees of businesses that wouldn't give a shit anymore somehow lying to protect him. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting kind of kernel of truth here to this, which is that prosecutors, when prepping their witnesses, will so it is. I mean, let me talk about what's a breach of ethics, right? We've talked about this before.
Reminds me of a personal story. Here, let me tell it.
It is a breach of ethics to suborn perjury if you are a lawyer, right? So, in other words, if your client says, "I definitely killed that guy," you cannot put him up on the stand and ask him, "Hey, did you kill that guy?"
Yeah.
And have him answer no.
Joke's on you. I don't know what suborning means, so I can do whatever I want.
It is also a breach of ethics to craft testimony for your witness. But it is not a breach of ethics when asking your potential witness a question to say, what would be super helpful here is if you could say X. and in fact,
do you mean like in court or like ahead of time?
No, I mean, when you're practicing beforehand, like, and to say, okay, we're going to ask a series of questions. You know, how about you maybe emphasize this part a little bit more? And there's a classic F. Lee Bailey story that I am going to relate because I remember it better than I remember this movie. Involving how to break the rules, right? And so it was, and I'm sure that this story is apocryphal, but I heard it as a baby lawyer, and probably some of our law students have heard it or a version of it as well. But supposedly legendary trial attorney F. Lee Bailey was defending his client, and the prosecution had put on a witness, young. Immigrant girl who tells this, like, super moving testimony, you know, what happened. And she goes through this, like, 10-minute story, and the prosecution says no further questions and sits down. And F. Lee Bailey gets up and says, Can you tell me what happened again? And she tells the exact same story again. And he says, can you tell me what happened again? And she tells the exact same story again. And he says, oh, in the exact same words. And he said, did you get that right? And she said, oh, no, I forgot, like, this word, right? And and then, right, and the idea was discrediting the witness by showing that she'd been made to memorize a statement, which she then, you know, gave as her testimony on the stand.
Right.
So, anyway.
Hey, didn't say no more story?
What? Yep, you did, but...
I guess I have no power around this place. Oh, well.
But now it's time for Renee Zellweger, Mrs. Poon, to take the stand.
Yeah, I think the washing the hair is about Mrs. Poon because Mrs. Poon says, like, I have a note here that, like, so she testifies that she was abused that day. And so Zellweger says she was abused on that day, I have written here. And the prosecution is like, why didn't you tell me that? And then, like, then they're mad, like, Keanu arranged the part where, you know, because there's a weird thing where she admits that the son did it, but also that, this is a fucking mess. None of this makes any sense. Yeah. What happens here? Do you remember this testimony?
I do remember this testimony, and, what I'll say is even worse, right? So you've accurately described it. But what's even worse is we then see both here and later on in the movie, we see her faking the injuries of being abused, which is terrible because earlier in the movie, right, this is to what you were alluding, we saw at least from the testimony of the neighbor, right, Arthur, like we saw the flashbacks of Jim Belushi, like, outright raping her, right? Like, it was not a So you don't need
it. Really, I swear to God, this movie doesn't know what it's trying to say.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if the movie was trying to suggest that's a misunderstanding. Like, maybe, you know, maybe they're into some kinky stuff, Andrew, and the neighbor just overheard, like, kind of misinterpreted what he heard, or we don't know. Like, we don't know, and it's not an interesting not knowing. It's like a muddled mess of not knowing.
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable. It's a fairly uncomfortable not knowing. I think that's right.
Yeah. So they try to do this like trick where Zellweger was going to say that the kid did it essentially, but then also say like sneak some other, like the movie wants to say this, and you tell me where, if it's what's full of shit here. The movie wants to say that it's a master stroke by I guess Keanu Reeves because Zellweger is going to say, you know, the kid did it to kind of like gain some credibility or to like look like she's honest and then also make up this story about how she was actually abused that day. And then when the prosecutor's like, oh, you coached her to say this or something. Then he's like, oh, yeah, did I coach her to say my client did it? You know, and like that's their defense. Yeah. So that's what happened. Now, tell us how much sense any of that makes.
None of that makes any sense.
Okay.
But all of it is designed to move us to the point in the plot, which makes sense on the head fake level, right? Of is the son going to testify, right? Because remember, the movie's been saying to this point that Mike has kept his mouth shut, right? He won't talk. And Keanu's, you know, we've had the voiceovers of, my client won't talk to me. If you don't talk to me, this is the best defense I can give you, right? Like, which again is totally irrelevant.
Not true. Yeah, I feel like I could give a better defense without him talking.
and so then.
But again, what does Keanu need to? It's not as though he's performing that "don't talk to me" for anybody. That's like within personal private scenes. So like, what does he want him to say, given that they both know Keanu did it? No, fucking dumb.
Yeah. And so now we have like the most bonkers detail in the entire movie. And again, like I get stuck in the like computer brain loop from Star Trek, the original series, right? Of like, wait, but if humanity must be soft. So here's what happens, right? Keanu is visiting Mike in prison because he's in pretrial detention. Mike wants to testify. Keanu says he won't put him on the stand. And then Mike, who has not spoken to Keanu throughout this, takes a piece of paper and writes down "you're fired" on the piece of paper and hands it to the guard, right? I write down "I'm firing Keanu" or whatever the hell, like, and hands it to the guard. And I'm sitting there going, like, wait, is the film trying to hide that he's mute? Like, it's nonsense. No, like, sense. You could just learn. You could look over and be like, well, then I'm firing you as my lawyer, right? To this day, I still don't understand what they're going for. It broke my brain and it hurt. But of course, we star wipe to Mike being on the stand.
Yeah. So, yep. And then he says, like, Keanu says, like, the client is taking the stand against his wishes. Is that how does that work? Can you do that? And then can't he just be like, so let's assume that Mike takes the stand against Keanu's wishes. Can't Keanu just be like, okay, no questions, and then sit down?
Yes. And also, like, the way in which this comes up, and look, like, this does come up in some high profile capital cases, right, where attorneys have represented defendants and have said, there's not a chance in hell I'm putting you on the stand. And if you insist on testifying, now you do have. So this part is correct, right? Like, as regardless of what your lawyer says, right, as the defendant, you have the right to testify. Hmm. Those are typically the basis of a lawyer moving move. Sorry, I'm trying to come up with the appropriate phrase in a criminal case, right? But basically, to withdraw from the case, right? And I don't know that it's withdraw in a civil matter, and I don't know if it has another word in a criminal matter. I don't think it does. But yeah, you say, like, okay, well, can't represent you anymore because and usually, right, the implication in these cases, and this is what maybe they were going for, I don't know, goes back to what I said before about the ethics rules, right? Like, if I knowingly can't suborn perjury and you've told me you've done it and then you insist on testifying, I can go to the judge and I can basically communicate with the judge, you know, and say, Your Honor, the ethics rules would prohibit me from continuing to represent my client in this situation, in which he insists on acting contrary to my recommendations, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. None of this makes any sense. And then we get the worst.
But of course it's brilliant because.
Oh yeah. Well, we've established that the kid is actually a secret genius. Why? We don't know. And does it pay off? No. But assuming he's a forensic genius and a law genius, he decides to tell the court that his dad was raping him. And it's like the most ridiculous, weird thing, because it ends up being bullshit, but right. He like has this whole thing about how, like, that's out so bad, you know. And again, wouldn't all this have just been a plea deal? Wouldn't it all be, you know, like, okay, well, this is self-defense, we're not doing murder one. Wouldn't have this all would have been, I would think, hashed out beforehand. I don't know. This, none of this makes any sense.
Well, again, you know, this is a series of surprising witnesses, each more surprising than the last. But yeah, it is, and it's played as we all know Mike is lying, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure at this point. In retrospect, I'm not sure. They tried to make it like the flight attendant didn't notice that, like, while they were in the plane.
well, so, okay. Yeah. So let's set that up because that does transition to the next scene. So Mike says, we're on the private jet and he raped me on the private jet like he did, you know, a bunch of previous times. And there's terrible cross-examination. I mean, it's just like
of textbook Mike?
Of Mike by the prosecutor.
The prosecutor switches into like, but were you in imminent danger mode?
And just tries, I got the same note.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, again, not a criminal lawyer, but hints to any prosecutors out there. If you're cross-examining a rape victim, maybe don't ask that question, were you in imminent danger? Like, that's not a good look. And again, remember, like, his goal as the prosecutor is to get the jury to return a verdict of guilty for murder. That is, not build sympathy for him as a victim and saying, like, oh, well, you know, you were being raped, but like, how much danger were you really, like, is just, it's meant to be ham-fisted to sort of advance the plot, but it's terrible. But yes, now we get to recall the flight attendant. Morley is her name. And 2/3 of the way, question mark, through the movie, we get to see, right? Remember I told you that the associate was this, like, lie-to-me level idiot savant of being able to ascertain the truth? Yeah.
Never matters.
Well, it matters in this scene, sort of, because she goes up to cross-examine Morley and say, oh, you said you didn't see Poon raping
his
son.
So she susses out that the flight attendant was having an affair with a pilot and therefore was like, would have been hanging out in the cabin a little bit, you know, and therefore might have not been able to see all the raping. It's so dumb.
And I have to say, I watched this movie three times, twice in preparation for the first time, and then once again, although not in its entirety, in preparation for this record. And it is – the movie describes Magic Associate as seeing, like, the flight attendant play with her wedding ring. The camera does not show that at all. I have watched this scene three times. It is absolutely not shown to us on the screen. But yes, so she's this, you know, invincible truth-telling, truth-detecting machine.
Yeah.
And again, oh, by the way, like, flight attendant having an affair with the pilot screwing around in the cockpit. Like, you know, did you know, 1975 run out of movie tropes that it needed to loan to this? Like, whatever. That was terrible and stupid. And then
and like the – so as you say, the magical associate who can detect lying kind of says, like, well, I think, you know, like, Mike might be lying, kind of. But it, again, what I was saying is, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't affect anything. She doesn't discover them and then blow their plot wide open or anything. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. Why is she there? Why would you have her there?
I don't know, but it sets up, and I bet you have the same note, right? In exactly that exchange back and forth, they're back in the war room, and Magical Associate looks at Keanu Reeves and says, you said everybody lies. And I'm like, no, House said that. he never said that at any point prior to her saying that he said that. So, you know, House reference there. But this is when the movie does the first head fake of getting us to believe that the mom did it and the son is covering up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just like, and all of this is stupid because their goal is to get Mike acquitted, right? And so Double Jeopardy is not like, oh, if we acquit your son, then we can't arrest you afterward. I never thought I would see a movie with, like, an implicit premise dumber than Double Jeopardy means you can't ever be arrested again. But maybe this did it. I don't know. we get, you know, some arguing between the lawyers in which the prosecutor's like, it's like you're protecting her. What? And then we get to the closing arguments, actual arguments, and we get to see a textbook example of the worst written closing statement in all of history, which includes the prosecutor saying, and I had to write this down word for word, quote, and if nothing happened, then how do we know any of it happened? End of quote. Which, look, pro tip for the lawyers who listen to the show, if you ever find yourself writing that sentence, cross it off and then enter another profession, right? Like,
yeah. The line I wrote down. So are you talking about the prosecutor's closing argument? Or,
yeah.
I have one, quote, the defendant is supposed to be a legal prodigy, and yet there's no evidence to support his defense. Is that a good argument? Well, no. The defendant himself, like, makes no sense. He's not the lawyer. Why would that?
And he's a kid. And again,
you'd just be like, the defense of that would be like, well, he's a kid. Why would he? Of course he's not a legal fucking prodigy.
And the legal prodigy stuff is all subtext from flashbacks from prosecution witnesses, right? Like, it's not – we never get anything, right? Like, there's nothing in Mike's testimony. Like, I would have even said legal genius to that point. It was just more like, oh, like, his dad is, you know – T. Poon Pickens, the, you know, best lawyer in the South. And like they one of the ways that they bonded was the son was also going to be a lawyer until all of a sudden he wasn't when he realized his dad was a piece of shit. But like that's not the same as like, you know, he's been genetically engineered to be a super lawyer, right? Like we gave him the Hydra serum that like triples his brain capacity or whatever.
And the thing that's confusing. So Janelle is the hot associate, and conflict.
She is super hot, by the way.
Yeah, and she's like in the war room. I think she senses something's wrong, and so there's a question: will she even show up the next day? You know, like and Keanu's like, you got to show up because anybody, if the jury senses any changes or you know, that's gonna kill our case. So there's a stupid conflict there. She shows up. And then so we get all those shitty closing statements that suck. And then we get – so here's what's weird. We get a not guilty. Are we ready for this?
Oh, no. But before we get that, right, the whole like dun-dun-dun, the camera pans over to Mike. And now Mike has been doodling absentmindedly throughout the trial. Okay? That's a thing that we've established. But now he's drawing a thing that kind of looks like a pattern. Right?
Yeah.
And it's going to establish, by the way, that it's Keanu Reeves's watch on the floor by the bed when Poon was killed, which means that I know you killed my dad. But none of that was ever established. Like, the only part they decided to foreshadow was, oh, by the way, kid likes to draw. And you're like, cool. But then when they like zoom in on his drawing of the watch, you're not like, you're like, what the hell is that? I draw little zaggy lines and then little circles when I'm stuck on a conference call for a long time. Like, it is bonkers. It is just bananas in pajamas level crazy.
It's so dumb. Like, and it's not even a good piece of evidence. Like, there's a million explanations for that. Yeah. Not only that, like, why would his watch fall off? How easy is it for a watch to fall? Reminder, he didn't actually kill Poon.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be one thing if it was like, well, during the struggle of trying to kill Poon, Poon did what? No, the kid did that, didn't he? Or no? Oh, wait. No, did he kill Poon.
He did. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did kill Poon. But okay. Like,
I retract my statement.
But there's no struggle. It's got a strap, so it's not like, and right, as you point out, his watch being at the scene at the base of the bed is totally consistent with him.
Being
banging
with
Renee, you know, porking Renee Zellweger.
Maybe they're in a throuple.
Right. Who knows? Like, there's so many things that, like, that doesn't remotely establish, I know you killed my dad. Like, I would have loved if this movie had cut away instantly to, because then,
maybe
as
the
you
kid
point
was
out,
drawing a detailed picture of his cock. Like, I saw you in the.
So as you point out, right, he gets a not guilty verdict. Everyone is celebrating. He gives Mike a big hug, and Mike whispers, meet me after court, right? Yeah. And then confronts him.
Hold on. I wanted to throw this in.
Oh, okay.
Janelle hugs the kid.
Yeah.
Which, that doesn't even make sense. The whole thing was like, she knows something's wrong.
Right.
You know, and she's not even going to show up because she knows he's lying. And then they get not guilty. It's like the director just forgot or something, or the actors forgot what was happening. Like, yeah, you would all hug. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. It's like this. Her truth detector is the C button, and it has to recharge.
Yeah,
and it was just down for that. Now, but so he says, "Meet me after court," and then confronts him and says, and shows the drawing, and is like, "Your watch was there that day. You definitely killed my dad." And if Keanu Reeves had turned and been like, no, man, like, your mom is Renee Zellweger. I've just been, like, banging the shit out of her this whole time. Like, but no, I'll
let
definitely
your dad borrow
her.
My watch one day.
Yeah.
Just for fun. You know, it's not even that good of an evidency thing. It's not, it's terrible.
But
and then he also asks, so he asked the mom, did dad really hit you? And so this is like the whole, again, we don't know. I don't know. I don't know what it's going for. I don't know if it was all supposed to be fake or some of it was supposed to be fake. It's just so, it's so unclear in not a good way. It's unclear in a like, what am I supposed to even be wondering here? So there you go.
And then we get the word. Well, then we get the worst possible wrap up, which is back in the courtroom, back to Keanu doing the voiceovers. And he says, the jury found Michael not guilty. They ignored the facts and the law in order. And you're just sitting there going like, no, they didn't. Like, the jury didn't do it. Like, from their perspective, right?
Yeah.
You introduced credible testimony that the victim was raping his son. And so they decided not to convict on first-degree murder.
Ignore any of that. Yeah, right. It's first-degree murder. So all they have to do is not, you know.
Right, is show that it wasn't premeditated. Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I know. And then I also have here, they can't prosecute anyone else, ?
They can't prosecute anyone else. Really? Okay. Well,
weird.
Good to know that we have this new system where it's like, okay, you guys get one shot at,
world. Jeopardy attaches to the whole world once you try somebody of a crime. You can't try a member of the planet twice for the same crime. That's how Jeopardy works.
I was just thinking the other day about like best Simpsons episodes and the Troy McClure. This is going somewhere. The Troy McClure.
Wait a minute. I wasn't saying your stories weren't good. I'm saying we don't have time for them.
When his agent calls him, it's like, hey, Troy, you remember the Planet of the Apes? And Troy says, you mean the movie or the planet? And I love that. I love that line so much. And then he's like, I mean the all-new Broadway musical, and you're going to be the lead.
The human.
The human.
It's the part I was born to play.
The part I was born to play. Oh, man. Oh, God. That is one of the all-time.
Rounding up notes I have here, at no point in the investigation did anyone ask why was the lawyer there like right when the the crime happened. No one was like, hey, what are you doing here? And none of the police. Hey, how did you – tell me what happened. Did she call you? Let's verify the cell phone records. Like, why? When did you arrive? Why did you arrive? You know, like, no.
I feel like – I'm porking Renee Zellweger. He's a pretty ironclad defense.
Like, yeah, he's like, you just kind of come on. Like,
you shrug your shoulders.
I think
we both
know why I was here. And then also, final note, which I don't remember if I already said, this was produced by the son of Alan Dershowitz. Did I already say that? I think I told you, but I don't know if I told the listeners.
You told me. I don't know if you told the listeners in the first half an hour, but
Legal prodigy. I'm sure that's how like Alan Dershowitz's son thinks of himself. Like, I'm the son of Alan Dershowitz. I'm a prodigy.
And Alan Dershowitz's son has got to be like, what, 65 now, right?
I don't know. There's no Wikipedia. I see the name, but
I will tell you this. I took three separate classes with Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz was a hero of mine in law school. I've painfully talked about that on OA. Not once did I ever hear Alan Dershowitz mention his kids. This is the first time I knew.
59 years old, Elon Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz.
How is that possible? How old is Alan Dershowitz?
Alan Dershowitz is like 200.
Yeah.
He's in his 80s.
He's 82. Like 80. Okay.
Yeah.
His son is 59. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway.
And he's a piece of shit. So, not Alan Dershowitz, not his son. I mean, his son just wrote a terrible movie.
His son's probably a piece of shit, but we're
Apple
not sure
does
yet.
Not fall far from the piece of shit. But that was, that hurt.
So, that was a movie. We got through it. We did it. Yeah, a lot happened in between, folks.
This,
but
this movie killed a Supreme Court justice.
Too bad.
Maybe we should cut that. Yeah.
Well, I don't edit these. So
you don't edit that, but that was a terrible joke. I apologize.
All right, folks. Yeah, it wasn't that bad. We've had worse movies. It's just mainly just stupid.
Yeah. I love looking for this is how low I've set the bar now, is that I like looking for things that are slightly authentic. And so I liked that we had the proper jury consultant.
I just realized if we ever want to do a movie that's too good to be a lamb again, which I think we've done once or twice, Fish Called Wanda. There's a great
Oh my God.
Law
how
scene
could,
at,
how
at
could
the
we
end.
Do well, it? It would be fun.
We could just
I
watch
would be
it.
Willing to do a Fish Called Wanda. We'll leave this. If you're a patron, you're listening to this, let us know in the comments if you want us to do a Lord Awful Movies that is just like Thomas and I talking about how amazing A Fish Called Wanda is.
Fucking movie. Yeah, it'd mainly just be a glowing review. Plus, it's not American Law, so.
Right. Oh, generally. I would have no idea. Oh, I'll just guess. It'll be fantastic.
Or we'll get a guest or something. We got to find some pieces of shit to review.
We could bring in Emma. Maybe, yeah. So. I just really want to watch A Fish Called Wanda. It's
so good. Maybe we just watch it. All right. That's our show, everybody.
There is nothing to stop us from
next
just
time.
Movies.
We will actually do a lamb all in one piece. We promise. It'll be great. I mean, assuming, you know, fingers crossed on the other justices.
Oh, there is. Did you see the advertising for the like judge show that's on during the baseball games? Like, there's some
Like All Rise.
Yes, All Rise is what it's called. It looks fucking terrible. So
So
add that to the potential list.
Thanks so much for listening, patrons.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
We love you.